This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhaib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
This is a continuation of the ethnic cleansing we saw in the Darfur conflict from two decades ago, where the RSF sees it as an opportunity to displace African populations and seize land.
That was Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies on Sudan's paramilitary rapid support forces, RSF, ongoing attacks in El Fasher. Details coming up. Also, 6,000 women die in Kenya each year due to poor access to maternal health facilities. And Algerian President Abdelmadjid Tebboune has been sworn in for a second term. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Exploding pagers have killed at least 12 people and wounded almost 3,000 in Lebanon in an attack that has drawn condemnation around the world. VOA national correspondent Dave Selden is on the line to brief us on the attack. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Jeff. We'll be expecting to talk to Jeff Selden on the matter. Exploding pagers have killed at least 12 people and wounded almost 3,000 in Lebanon in an attack that has drawn condemnation around the world. So welcome to Africa News Tonight, Jeff.
My pleasure. Glad to be here.
So what is the latest in this unusual attack and how did it happen?
Good questions. Well, a day after thousands of pagers exploded across Lebanon, pagers that were being used mostly, as we understand it, by members of the Hezbollah terror group. There have been another round of explosions and reports of more death. This time, talks of two-way radios or walkie-talkies exploding. Also reports of other devices, including perhaps some keypads, also possibly cell phones exploding. And there's a sense that more could yet to become, that there's another shoe that's going to drop. Israel has not come out and said that they've done that, that they've taken this action, although there are reports that Israeli officials have now briefed the U.S., and Hezbollah itself is blaming Israel for these explosions, which have wounded hundreds of its officials and officers and operatives, and perhaps with more being targeted today in new and different ways.
So what are the security implications for the Middle East?
Those are going to possibly be far-reaching. If it is indeed true that Israel is behind these attacks, it looks like, according to experts, that a couple of things happened. First, in terms of the pagers, the reports are that these pagers were commissioned by a Taiwanese-based company, but they were then farmed out to a company in Hungary, and it's unclear exactly how the shipment of these new pagers several months ago actually got to Lebanon and to Hezbollah, but it appears from analysis of the videos that have appeared online that these pagers were doctored, they were altered, and that the whoever carried out these attacks, again, likely Israel, put in a little bit of explosive so that when a signal was sent out, they detonated en masse. What remains to be seen is how these other devices, these walkie-talkies, which would not have come from the same shipment, were altered. But again, it's important to note that the reason that Hezbollah was using pagers, was using these other devices, is that there were extreme concerns that Israel was able to hack and infiltrate electronic communications like cell phones, so they didn't want to use that. So if the cell phones aren't safe to use, if email and other social media apps aren't safe to use, it would seem that the message being sent is that these other methods of communication also are not safe to use, and so it presents Hezbollah with a quandary, with a problem. How does it safely communicate, knowing that it is engaged in a back and forth with Israel, and that Israel may be potentially preparing for some sort of operation to push back Hezbollah so it can return Israeli residents who've had to evacuate northern Israel back to the north. And those are questions that are going to be answered over time. What also remains to be seen is what the psychological impact of this type of operation has when you have Hezbollah operatives and also other people in Lebanon walking around not trusting devices that perhaps they use every day to talk and to communicate with others.
And what are U.S. officials saying?
U.S. officials aren't saying very much about the actual operation, although the Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, did come out earlier and say that the U.S. was unaware of this operation and was not involved in this operation. And he said that the U.S. is still gathering information about what happened. But he also said that the U.S. has been very clear and remains very clear that they want all parties in the region to avoid further escalation. And one of the concerns the U.S. has had going for months now is that the war, the fighting between Israel and Hamas in Gaza could escalate. Hezbollah in Lebanon has launched rockets, has taken other actions in support of Hamas. And the concern has been that while the fighting has been focused on Gaza, that another front could open up. And the big concern is that a front between Israel and Lebanon could open up. And if that happens, what does that do to the region? What does it do to stability in the region? And how much wider does the fighting, how much bigger does this war get? And the U.S. has been working hard, focusing on a ceasefire in Gaza. And again, Antony Blinken earlier said the U.S. is still focused on that, thinking that if that can be achieved, it will ease tensions, de-escalate tensions in the rest of the region, and prevent a wider war from breaking out.
VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Seldon, thank you for your input. For months, fierce fighting between the Sudanese armed forces and the paramilitary rapid support forces in El Fasher has been going on. United Nations Security Council members have renewed their calls for an immediate cessation of hostilities, de-escalation, and the withdrawal of all belligerents in Al-Fashir. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thompson-Greenfield, urged the RSF to halt its attack, including bombardments, destroying infrastructure and threatening civilian life, and fulfill its commitments to protect civilians. Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies, spoke with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi about why the RSF has ignored calls for a ceasefire.
Well, I think it's a clear sign that the RSF believes that it can act with impunity. And it's a posture that it has taken really from the beginning of the conflict. There aren't any other security forces or monitoring bodies that are operating in the region that can curtail the RSF's activities or even authoritatively document the RSF's abuses. So they see it as a green card to continue their attacks. And I think we should be clear that they don't just have military objectives, but this is a continuation of the ethnic cleansing we saw in the Darfur conflict from two decades ago, where the RSF sees it as an opportunity to displace African populations and seize land for the Arab militias that are operating in that region and across parts of the Sahel. And the humanitarian costs are extremely high. There are some 750,000 internally displaced people in Al-Fashir now, and estimates are that some 15% of these internally displaced people in some of the camps, so we're talking about 75,000 people, are facing famine. And so the situation has been building up for all year, and now we're starting to see the real tragic outcomes of this. And the worry is that if Al-Fashir were to fall, we're going to see even more mass atrocities. So I think the fact that the RSF is ignoring these calls really speaks to its sense of insulation from international pressure right now.
Tom Perriello, the U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan, said that the members of the Aligned for Advancing Life Saving and Peace in Sudan Group, USA, United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Switzerland, African Union, and the UN, formed in Geneva last month, continue to push for more humanitarian and civilian protection measures in Sudan. What else could this regional and international alliance do to push the two warring sides to negotiate an end to the conflict in Sudan?
Well, one thing they can do is to raise attention and put more pressure on the external actors that are funding the respective militias. It's been known that the UAE has been the major sponsor for the RSF. Moreover, there are reports that Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and Iran in various ways are sponsoring the Sudan armed forces. Yet, despite this growing public awareness, there hasn't been that much external pressure on these entities that are funding the parties. And I think that is something that the negotiating group can give more attention to, especially since a number of members of that group are, in fact, parties to the conflict through their sponsorship. And so they have vested interest, and by being around the table, they can potentially hash out those differences and agree on some sort of ceasefire and an agreement that they would monitor one another's funding support and material support for the respective forces. And, you know, I think it really highlights, you know, the complexity of this conflict, that we aren't just talking about the individual military actors on the ground, but the regional, international actors that are seeing advantages in sponsoring one side or the other as well.
That's Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies here in Washington, speaking with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi. The West African bloc, ECOWAS, today expressed strong condemnation of militant attacks that hit the capital of Mali on Tuesday. The Economic Community of West African States said it wishes to reaffirm its condemnation of any terrorist attack which threatens the peace and security of people in the West African region. Bamako was on Tuesday hit by a deadly attack claimed by an Al-Qaeda-linked militant group. The French news agency AFP says details of the toll from the attack on a military police training center and airport have not been released. Maternal mortality remains a key issue affecting women of reproductive age in Kenya. The Ministry of Health says more than 6,000 women die in Kenya each year due to poor access to maternal health facilities. New technology developed by university students is helping healthcare workers to remotely monitor conditions of pregnant women and their children without physical visits to hospitals. Juma Majanga reports from Nairobi, Kenya.
David Saruni, a computer science student at Kabarak University in Kenya's Rift Valley region, is one of the students involved in developing the application known as Mama's Hub.
The project's objective is to prevent the onset of preeclampsia, which may cause death to mothers and even infants after their delivery. So this project is going to save lives.
The World Health Organization defines maternal health as the health of women during pregnancy, childbirth, and the postnatal period. Despite a global decline in maternal mortality ratio over the past two decades, WHO says the Africa region still lags behind. Africa accounts for more than two-thirds of the global maternal deaths. Mama's Hub allows health providers to remotely monitor conditions of pregnant women and attend to them. The women wear a smartwatch that monitors their vital signs such as blood pressure, heart rate, and temperature. The monitor is connected to a mobile phone which relays the information to a database. Healthcare workers at Mama's Hub can review the information and refer women to nearby doctors if they are concerned. Artificial intelligence enters the picture here, as patients will also be able to obtain prescription through a chatbot, which is now in the testing stages. Moses Thiga was principal investigator of the Mama's Hub project.
If the onset of the condition is detected before 20 weeks, then there are interventions that can be instituted. The same case with others like gestational diabetes.
The National Research Fund-supported technology also enables digitization of prenatal care records of patients for easier access. It has been tested in prenatal care clinics in the Rift Valley city of Nakuru with the aim of rolling out to the rest of the country. Nakuru County Chief Nursing Officer Wendy Tirop says the digitization has improved record tracing.
Digitalizing this document is, it makes it very easy for the facilities, like if there is the interlinking between the facilities. So it makes it very easier for the healthcare provider to be able to trace and identify mothers who have failed to come to the clinic and do a follow-up.
The WHO says sub-Saharan Africa accounts for nearly 70% of maternal deaths. Health experts say such innovations like Mama's Hub can help save the lives of women and newborns. Juma Majanga, VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. And we would love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1 202 258 3076. +1 202 258 3076. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on Africa News Tonight. Zimbabwe's government has given in to pressure from rights groups and is now providing free treatment to women with obstetric fistula, a condition that makes it hard for mothers who went through difficult labor to control their bowels. Columbus Mavunga reports from Chinhoye, a farming and mining area about 150 kilometers west of Harare, one of the areas in Zimbabwe where early marriages are common and where the treatment is taking place.
These are young women at Chinhoye Provincial Hospital after government gynecologists have performed the surgery to address obstetric fistula. They are clearly happy, as one of them, we shall call Chiedza, a 23-year-old mother. She has not been able to control her bowels since giving birth to her boy 7 years ago. She says, when I gave birth, I tore my private parts, so I couldn't hold my feces. So when I heard about this free service on a WhatsApp group for women, I called a toll-free number which was there and I came here. So I'm now going to live a comfortable life. I can now perform even house chores comfortably, says Chienza. Another woman who wants to be called Tendai ruptured her bladder after a protracted labor at home while giving birth at the age of 16. Tendai says, I would share nappies with my baby so as to block my smell from others. At one time, I almost committed suicide because people kept on laughing at my condition. I thought I'd been bewitched till I came here and saw that there are some people in my condition. I'm grateful for this procedure, for it has given me hope, says Tendai. Nom Velo says she can't wait to show her new self to her community once discharged. The WHO estimates that between 50,000 and 100,000 women experience obstetric fistula every year, and about 2 million women in sub-Saharan Africa are living with this condition. Dr. Stanley Ngwaru, a senior gynecologist in Zimbabwe's Ministry of Health, says the condition is an abnormal communication between the woman's genital tract and the urinary tract or the rectum.
And they suffer shame and they suffer social segregation. It's very common in young women, because the genital tract is not well developed, and when they go into labor, they are more likely to suffer from obstruction, and this can lead to these communications are developing between the genital tract and the urinary tract and the rectum.
Lucia Masuga, head of Amnesty International in Zimbabwe, says she commends the government of President Emmerson Mnangagwa for offering the free service. However, she says the government needs to develop strategy to prevent this condition among young women.
If we therefore facilitate access to sexual reproductive health services for this group, it will reduce instances of early pregnancies and in turn reduce cases of obstetric fistula. Whilst treatment is a positive development, it's akin to trying to mop water from an open tap. You will never really be able to mop that water as long as the tap is open.
Amnesty International in Zimbabwe last year pleaded with Parliament to push the government to make obstetric fistula treatment a national issue after its research had revealed that the condition was rampant among young ladies in Zimbabwe and were not getting enough attention. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Chinoy, Zimbabwe.
Algerian President Abdelmadjid Tebboune has been sworn in for a second term after being elected in a landslide vote marred by apathy and questions around the vote count. The Associated Press reports that Tebboune's two challengers, Islamist Abdullahi Hassan Sharif and socialist Yusuf Aouchicha, attended the ceremony yesterday. It comes 3 days after Algeria's Constitutional Court certified Tebboune's landslide victory in the September 7th elections following a vote recount. The figures showed that with 7.7 million votes, Tebboune won 84.3% of the vote, surpassing his 2019 win by millions of votes and a double-digit margin.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Ghana's biggest opposition party, the National Democratic Congress, has held nationwide protests to demand an audit of the voter roll for the coming December general election. Protests took place in all 16 regional capitals, including Accra. Johnson Asidu Inkatha, the NDC chairman, emphasized the party's demand for free and fair elections. Ghana has held peaceful elections for nearly two decades. However, allegations of voter roll irregularities have raised concerns. The NDC alleges there have been unauthorized transfers and erasures of voter names. The protests ended with a petition to Parliament and the Electoral Commission. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Al Santos, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.